Off the Ball.
GAA.
The game is in a state of evolution at the minute, a state of flux. It's constantly evolving. There may be little tweaks needed, but I don't really fully get why they changed what we had last year.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The final one standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
Yep, this is Final One Standing, your guide to the Premier League weekend. David and Shane with me today. Just looking at the fixtures, lads. This is like the first really well-rounded, good Premier League weekend in a long time. It's like this Leeds-Arsenal game tomorrow is just absolutely intriguing to me with Leeds' home form. And then you have two pretty big fixtures of the way we look at it. Is it a top eight now? Are we allowed to say top eight? Big eight?
Yeah, I think you can say top eight now, yeah. Especially after five teams qualifying the top eight in the Champions League during the week.
Yeah. Mm.
Straight to the last 16.
That's it. And watching Premier League teams struggle with other English teams in a way that they don't with European teams. So it's just still something that I think is we're struggling to get our head around.
Yeah.
But it is, especially the Burnley Spurs game last week that was such an eye opener after they just took care of business against Dortmund. And then it was like, I'm not really surprised that they almost lost to Burnley even.
Yeah, it's funny because even the crap games on paper this week are actually half, like even Wolves-Bournemouth you'd probably look at and say that's the last one I'm going to look at, but Wolves are in a decent bit of form, Bournemouth are good to watch.
Or like Chelsea-West Ham say, which would be a nothing 3 o'clock, Chelsea take care of business and suddenly West Ham are in some kind of form and are winning games, yeah.
Yeah, Villa-Brentford, two teams that like to play football the right way.
And Brentford have beaten Villa twice already this season, although once was on penalties. It's a draw, really.
Doesn't count, does it, Mick? Doesn't count.
Lee Phelps from William Hill is with us. Lee, how are you?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Yeah, it's interesting the way you introduced that, because I remember when I did the prep for this weekend, I was looking, thinking, this is a nightmare weekend to pick tips in because it's so open. But yeah, that's yours is a positive way of looking at it.
Liverpool, Newcastle, I like that they've, there's not that many 8 o'clock Saturday night kickoffs, but it feels like Liverpool, Newcastle always has to be a night game. Mm-hmm. And we're just all they want to do is just recreate the 4-3. They'll give us every chance they possibly can for the rest of time every time Liverpool and Newcastle play. But it is funny how it does actually seep into our subconscious. There's no world in which we won't look forward to a Liverpool Newcastle game.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, the first one that we had this season was fantastic, wasn't it? Anthony Gordon, of course, going off. Yeah, brilliant game. There's something about them that wherever they are in the league tables, whatever's happening in those clubs, yeah, something amazing happens. It's like, I mean, Liverpool were obviously coasting. You look at the midweeks, like chalk and cheese, weren't they? Obviously, Newcastle had it all on going away to obviously one of the best teams in Europe, got a good result in the end. And Liverpool, you know, I mean, it looked like the Carabag players came for the shopping at Liverpool one rather than anything else, didn't it? Liverpool really eased to a big win there. But the manager was saying last weekend, wasn't he, that they were like running on empty pretty much after losing to Bournemouth. So, you know, what's going to happen? I don't know which Liverpool to trust it. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the 4-5, the touch of odds on.
Yeah.
Newcastle have got an awful record at Anfield in the league. 1994, the last time they won there. Their away form this season doesn't suggest anything. Yeah, doesn't suggest anything that they're away from this season either. So they're just under 3-1, which, you know, I'd like to make an argument for it, but I can't. The draw is just under 3-1. And like, I think because of the way you've said it's well-rounded, I seem to have gone through a lot of draws this weekend. I know he's sitting on the fence, but it's like a lot of these games you can see finishing in draws.
I never understand picking a draw is sitting on the fence. You've got three options and a draw is one of them. It's one of those. It's like, I think it's harder to pick a draw sometimes, isn't it? There are less draws than wins.
Well, yeah. And if you pick a draw treble, you're doing really well because you're usually getting a really nice price if you manage to get two or three draws into a double or a treble. No one would be surprised to see this one being a score draw, would they? Like 2-2.
What do you think, lads? Because I think Lee's right. I would look at this and just go, oh, my head hurts, because both of them doing well in Europe. Newcastle, like even their home form last Sunday was just like, Villa kind of took care of business against them in a way that you almost wouldn't expect at St. James's Park anybody to do. And it's just, they're having, I suppose, moments throughout the season. That's why they're not like ridiculously far Spurs down the league. Mm. But generally their form has been poor and nowhere near the form of last season or three seasons ago.
Mm.
But Liverpool, I just don't trust them in any game at the moment, David.
No, you can't. Like Newcastle, I think one of the big things for Newcastle this week, and Eddie Howe was speaking about this morning, is whether Bruno Guimarães is fit.
Yeah.
He obviously missed the game last week, and there was a stat last week, I think in something like 150 plus games that Bruno Guimarães has been part of at Newcastle since he joined in 2022, he's missed 9 of them, and Newcastle have failed to win any of those 9.
Wow.
So he is Mr. Newcastle. He's probably one of the best midfielders and one of the best signings Newcastle have made in, I guess, the Premier League era. And I think it all hinges on whether he's available to play tomorrow night.
Yeah.
But with Liverpool, if they don't win tomorrow, they'll become the first Liverpool side to fail to win any of their opening 6 league fixtures of a calendar year since 1954. So this Liverpool run, of 4 draws and a loss last week, obviously to Bournemouth, has been crap, and they're on the most kind of unconvincing unbeaten run before that anyway. So
yeah,
this game is incredibly tough to call tomorrow night.
But you say that if you listen to that in a vacuum, you would think Liverpool won 6-0 during the week, they're on the back of a defeat and they haven't won at all this year, they're going to go for it on Saturday night. But I don't, we're not in a vacuum. And my sense of this game, and it's why I'd back up Lee's idea of a draw, is that both of these teams will be afraid. This actually might not be the classic that we're sort of saying Liverpool versus Newcastle should be. Because I wonder, are both teams just afraid of losing?
They're both so inconsistent, and the fear factor of Anfield, it will come back, but it's not there currently. Obviously, notwithstanding the European performance during the week, but they just need to find something quick. You're even seeing a little bit of tetchiness from Arne Slot in his interviews as well. He seems more off guard and unguarded with his comments, that he kind of comes out with things that are clearly a little bit tetchy. Van Dijk, I mean, his form has just been brutal. I know he's kind of become a beacon to point all the negativity towards, but he does kind of defend with aura alone at times, and he gets a little bit of hate on social media for it, and maybe rightly so because of performances recently, particularly against Bournemouth. But I don't know, they just need to find something. Like, during the week they looked like a team with a little bit of shackles off. Chiesa obviously celebrates the 6th goal, and there's all a bit of a feel-good factor around Anfield, but these are two teams that you can't trust. And at the end of the season, this could be a key result. And just on the draw thing, I guess sitting on the fence is a draw because the game starts as a draw. If both teams just tipped off and sat on the pitch for 90 minutes, it would finish in a draw. So it is
okay. Technically
sitting on the fence.
The draw is a really interesting, without going too niche here, the draw is a really interesting concept in betting, as you guys have said, but also in play. I always find it, if you bet in play on football, the draw naturally gets shorter as the game goes on, if it is a draw. That doesn't mean to say it's going to be a draw. So that's the way the algorithm works. If you watch a game and watch the betting on the 90 minutes, the home, away and draw, it just naturally, if this is nil-nil, after 70 minutes, the draw's odds on. That doesn't mean it will be a draw. You know, it's like looking at a nil-nil, boring nil-nil draw. So I always think it's interesting to kind of look at, you know, that as a concept. With 20 minutes to go, if you think a game is going to have more goals in it, then back overs on the goals in play, or back a team to win. But yeah, it's a weird thing. Often people say, oh, in a two-horse race in a football match, and of course it never is.
I think it's a real opportunity for Newcastle tomorrow because, like, Liverpool are unbeaten in their last 18 Premier League matches against Newcastle, and in the last 29 at Anfield, as Lee kind of referenced earlier there. It's Newcastle's joint longest such winless run against an opponent in their league history. And this is an opportunity. We've got a bit of pressure, I think, around Eddie Howe from Saudi ownership. And obviously they got a good result during the week against PSG, which I pay a lot more kind of credence to rather than the Liverpool result against Carabao. This is a chance to go to Anfield and beat a Liverpool team who has a bit of a defensive injury crisis. And kind of set your stall out for the rest of the season.
They have to go with Vissa, Gordon and Barnes, don't they? Leave Valtamada out and just try and beat them the way United beat City a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I think
that's where they have a chance, isn't it?
Yeah, Valtamada has kind of gone off the boil after a pretty good start to his Newcastle career. During the week they brought on, and it was quite obvious that what Howe's thinking was during the week when they brought on Gordon and Barnes later on to kind of run it behind that PSG team. So I think this Newcastle team could counter-attack Liverpool, especially without Frimpong, who's going to be missing a few weeks. I think they could counter-attack them really well. I think this is a big opportunity for Newcastle to go and make a statement for the rest of the season and kind of put your Champions League credentials on the line.
Absolutely. One thing, actually, Lee, Florian Wirtz has been one kind of I suppose, positive in the nightmare 2026 for Liverpool so far, in that he is starting to show the final product, I suppose, that defenders of him would say has been kind of, you know, the form has been there all season and not showing in the numbers. Has there been, if you were to look at, say, goal markets for tomorrow's game, is are we still at the thing where we might get a bit of value on Verts because his overall numbers for the season haven't been good?
Yeah, definitely. Well, there's a price boost around him to assist a goal. So he's been pushed out to 7-2 to assist. And he's 16-5. So, you know, over 3-1 to score in the game, 8-1 to score first. I do think, you know, and you can obviously, in your bet builders, you can have score or assist as a market as well these days. So there's plenty of ways in. I agree. I just keep watching thinking, is now the time. He's a touch of odds against 5-4 to score or assist in the match. So maybe not that much value in that one. But yeah, I'd be looking. I like him. Obviously, he's a great player. He's just kind of taking his time, isn't he? But yeah, you'd never be surprised to see him pop up and get a goal or an assist these days.
In a weekend when we have Liverpool, Newcastle and Spurs City, I suppose I'm surprised even at myself that Leeds and Arsenal is the game that I'm most looking forward to and most intrigued by. I know you're surrounded by the Leeds mafia up there, Lee, and always have them in your ear, and their form is going to be very close to you. But I look at this game and I see I see the draw's 3-1 and Leeds are 24-5. So I don't know what that makes a kind of a betting against Arsenal odds. But Leeds' home form has been absolutely brilliant, and I don't think they're a pushover for anybody. They're also a team that, like Forest a few weeks ago, Arsenal won't be able to physically bully and wear down over the course of a game. They are significantly better than them quality wise, so that might come out. But I just, everything points to this just being a struggle for Arsenal tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I don't know what it is about the football psyche. Non-Arsenal fans are just waiting for them to slip up, aren't they? Obviously, last weekend, there was kind of a bit of celebration just in the general football community that the title race was still alive. And given how good Leeds are, like you say, I think there'll be a fair few Leeds fans wanting to get on them at just under 5-1. The draws, like you say, 3-1. There's a few games this weekend where I've been looking at putting so you basically go Leeds and the draw. There's a few of those. I like Fulham and the draw at Man United as well. And then, like I said, there are a few of those where you think Everton and the draw is a bigger price than Brighton to win, for instance. So there are a few of these kind of like where you just take two results out of the three. Look, if we whittle it down to, can Leeds score? I think the answer to that is yes. Arsenal are leaking goals. We know Leeds, I think Leeds have scored in every game except one at Elland Road this season. If you look at the last six Premier League games for Arsenal, they've had 2-0 draws against Forest and Liverpool and conceded 7 goals in the other 4 matches. They've only conceded 17 all season, so they are leaking goals. They're making mistakes at the back. Leeds, I think, can punish that, so they can score. That's like tick one. Both teams to score. I think Arsenal can score as well. That's both teams to score. So whichever way you go in it, I think you add both teams to score in. Obviously, the obvious way to go would be Arsenal to win it and both teams score in at 12-5. But the score draw at 9-2, I do like it. Look, Elland Road, everyone knows it's a cliche. It's a great place to play football. It'll be rocking with Arsenal coming to town. They did beat them 5-0 at their place, remember, early on in the season.
I think
this is where, if Arsenal get a good result here, if they get a win here, scruffy win, play them off the park, whatever, it's a huge, huge win for them, I think. If they slip up a bit here and City do beat Tottenham, then it's on. I think then we start to test Arsenal's mettle, don't we?
Yeah, and Villa beat Brentford, of course, but sure we'll lose. Yeah.
Can't forget about it.
No, I forget about it. Don't care. I'm only joking, believe it or not. But that's it, lads, isn't it? Like, I know every week is like, if Arsenal win this, then there'll be no stopping them. But I think, like, if you look at their fixtures, they had, you know, that United game and then that Leeds game just never looked easy. Mm. Again, it's just it almost like at their best, even if Mikel Arteta's amazing post, Man United, you know, let's all feel happy about our lives showdown actually works and actually does kick them into a more confident Arsenal. This was always going to be a hard game for them. It's like it just doesn't suit. All their advantages, I think, are kind of somewhat mitigated well by Leeds and their physicality. So it's always going to be a hard game. But if they do win it, they can go on a run of 5 or 6 wins in a row here and wrap it up, I think.
Yeah. Every team looks at Leeds away at the start of the fixtures every year and pinpoints it as a tough game on paper.
But in this particular moment in time and the way they've been playing since kind of the start of December, it is one.
If you're to make the argument for Arsenal, which seems a strange thing to say given they're top of the table, Keith Tracy, who is an Arsenal fan, very confident in Off the Ball Breakfast this morning that Arsenal will get a result. Maybe it's because the bee has been stung the last couple of games, and maybe every team that goes on to win a title needs that sort of January, February run of blunders maybe and poor performances, which they're currently going through. Clearly Kai Havertz's return is massive as well. He's a player Mikel Arteta obviously loves. He could start potentially tomorrow afternoon. Maybe a start might be a bit much for him at this stage, but he looked really good during the week. And also, it's not a half 12 kickoff. I find, lads, and there's no science behind this, I find the half 12 kickoffs at Elland Road with the sun high in the sky, there's just something about
that. Leeds is kryptonite, so you can't play at Elland Road under the lights, and half 12 is also a killer red, but 3 o'clock is the one time you can get them.
You could get a result at 3 o'clock or half 5 even, Mick, but 8 o'clock or half 12, not a hope.
Not this time of year. That's under the lights at this time of year.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, I think Arsenal have, to me, have been one of the most unconvincing league leaders of all time in the Premier League. I think, like, they really are struggling to create chances from open play. I think last Sunday was an embarrassment against Man United, the way they played football. This is a really tough game for them tomorrow, but you just can't rely on set pieces, like, you know, to win every single game. Okay, they're making the small percentages count, but, like, you're going to have to go and actually play about football and kind of score a couple of goals. I think, I really do think that Victor Gyökeres is a huge problem for Arsenal up front. Saka has gone off the boil. Martinelli has gone off the boil. The game during the week is irrelevant because of the standard of opposition they were playing. And like Eze, like, was meant to be this huge signing that was going to be, you know, maybe the player to get them over the line. And we kind of spoke about it on this kind of show when that happened. I have real concerns about Arsenal, and 4 points is a lead that is, yeah, it's okay at this time of the year. And I know Keith Tracy has been speaking, like, you know, Arsenal don't need to panic. But if I'm an Arsenal fan, and we seen it there last Sunday, I would be panicking because this team I do not trust.
The other thing I thought was interesting during that match last week was the fact that, you know, the manager, he's been criticised, I guess, for not letting his team attack, not letting his team off the leash and go for it. You know, look at the big games against the big teams. Against the Liverpool side, they should have gone and beaten. City team, they should have beaten. Chelsea team, who were down to 10 men, they didn't really put the foot down on the pedal. They couldn't do it last weekend. And then all of a sudden, on 58 minutes, he sends 4 players on. Yeah. And he's got, getting all this, go on attack. It's like, well, you haven't been doing that all the season. It felt like a panic move. Well, it was a panic move, wasn't it? Because, you know, they'll lose. But, like, it felt like even more like, hang on. And, you know, when you think about the atmosphere in the ground, this is a team who are top of the table, apparently the best team in Europe, maybe the world, apparently. And the crowd's getting after them because they're losing to Manchester United early on in the game. It's like, what? You know, go and win the game. Like, you know, this is a big test, isn't it? Yeah. How do they bounce back? How do they bounce back, having played in midweek, even if it was a bit of an easy, you know, an easy run out for them? Go and attack Leeds and beat them. You know, you beat them 5-0 at your place. Go and beat them again like that. It's going to be a fascinating. I agree. It's a fascinating game. Shame it's tucked away at 3 o'clock. I don't know why this isn't a Sunday game.
Yeah, even when Mourinho scores the equaliser last weekend, again from a set piece, the crowd gets behind them for a couple of minutes, but you still feel if United get one more chance here in possession, they're going to score. They're a better team by far.
Yeah. The big thing for me in terms of, I think we're all quick to jump on it being a mentality issue with Arsenal, and sometimes there isn't evidence to suggest that. The evidence to me is, as soon as they went 1-0 up on Sunday, the goal that Manchester United equalised with was the third chance in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And they all came from absolute brain farts in defence.
Yeah, Superman.
And they finally put it away in the third time with the worst mistake of them all. And I'm like, that doesn't happen. You've just scored. I don't know whether that's because they start concentrating because they'd had the breakthrough, or whether they were like, we have to win from here and it's even more pressure. But they completely collapsed. And they got back into the game and so on. But like, and it took a wonder strike to win it, fair enough. But I think I think you can, like, that is absolute evidence for me.
Yeah.
That there's something real going on there, mindset-wise.
Like, yeah, and I think okay, we can kind of question their mentality because they haven't actually won anything. Like, okay, Arteta won an FA Cup early on in his managerial reign, but you need to have some sort of process that how you're going to create chances and score goals. And Arsenal never looked like scoring a goal from open play against Man United. And the game against Liverpool, where Liverpool came like off the back of some really kind of poor performance, okay, they weren't getting beat, but Liverpool should have maybe won that game in the second half. Like, Liverpool were the better team in that second half. And you're at home against, you know, the current Premier League champions. Like, this is a chance to put out a statement, and they just don't do it. So they haven't done it against Liverpool. They didn't do it against United. Didn't do it against Chelsea, like what Lee said there earlier. Tomorrow is a huge test against a team that have really improved over this last couple of months, and Farke has done an excellent job. Leeds are going to be really up for tomorrow at Elland Road to kind of spoil an Arsenal party.
Yeah.
So I think it's a massive test.
It's a massive game. And again, if they do win it, credit to them. Because again, if I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm listening to this and go, why so negative? Like, you know, we're top of the Champions League, won every single game, top of the Premier League by 4 points at this stage of the season. You take it, hashtag. You know, and in the semi-final, the Carabao Cup, still in the FA Cup, everything is going well. But we're just analysing what we see. And it's like, if they do go out and beat Leeds and change that attitude, then you'll see things differently. So Spurs Man City is probably not the game. I just feel sorry. Like, there's an element of like, right, Spurs really struggle at home at the moment. You know, they've had a little bit of, they've had a good 2 weeks of the Champions League, but really very, very lucky not to lose to Burnley last week. It's all a disaster. We really struggle at home. Oh, great. Manchester City are coming to town. I suppose that could work one of two ways, though, Lee, because maybe that's the, you know, it's the concentration levels will certainly be up. It's not like, you know, the pressure on, oh, we have to beat Wolves or whoever it might be, Sunderland, and we can't do it. Whereas there won't be an absolute expectation that they go out and win this game, but they have to perform.
Bit of a free hit for them in a sense, isn't it? And I think there's a fair few Tottenham fans who wouldn't mind losing to City if it means that Arsenal keep getting pegged back. Tottenham have won three of the last four against City. It's one of those weird records. It's like, how did that happen? I mean, it was when City were in a bit of a slump, obviously. They're 100-30 to win at home. You think Tottenham at home against any team at that sort of price, you want to kind of have a think about it, then... I did have a think about it, and that lasted about 5 seconds. I thought, no, I can't entertain that. I'm not sure. City, a bit like Liverpool, I'm not sure I can trust them at an odds-on price. They're only 7-10, so it's not hugely short. So you probably would be looking to, you know, stick them in an acca, because I expect them to go and win. Again, the draw, I keep saying draw. 3-1, the draw. You can see goals in the game, both teams to score here. Haaland's got three in his last two at Tottenham. It's like a bit like we say about Arsenal, you know, the same with City, they have to win every game now. If they want to win this Premier League title, I think they have to win every game. And that's got to be their aim, to win every single game between now and the end of the season. And then they'll overhaul Arsenal, I think. But that's obviously a huge undertaking to do that. It's gold weekend, by the way, at William Hill. So that means we've got epic boosts. Normally we have epic boosts on the key, you know, the TV games, if you like. Epic boosts on every Premier League game. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this one is, because we've had Haaland as the epic boost a few times this season. Obviously, it was landing time after time. The last few have kind of obviously he's kind of gone on his like mini drought, so I'm interested. We haven't got them through from the traders yet, but I'm interested to see what it is in this one. I'd probably rather it be goals of some description, because I do see goals. I don't think Tottenham can keep Manchester City out, and I think Tottenham have got goals in them as well. Poor at home, as you guys said. You have to go with Man City in the end, don't you? If Arsenal do slip up And they've drawn the game at Elland Road, for instance, City, then it becomes even more must win, doesn't it? Because then you can really, same for Villa, you can really then close that gap and start to exert some serious pressure on them. So again, another intriguing game. It should be straightforward. I wish City were just a bit better, and then it would make me feel, you know, like
more comfortable.
Yeah,
because they haven't done it in the big games away from home so far this season. Before we go, Lee, just wanted to ask you about West Ham and relegation, because it's a very strange season. Everybody is winning, Leeds have won their last 16 games, as far as I can see, and they're still 16th in the league. It's just everybody's winning around them. But West Ham are on this run of form, and you thought they were going to close it, but again, everybody's winning. But it does feel that little bit tighter, and relegation might not be completely sorted this early. They're away to Chelsea, so, you know, get a point at Stamford Bridge maybe, and they can really start thinking about getting out. But what's the market like for relegation at the moment? Because you're just hearing a lot of murmurs about, like, Crystal Palace have thrown in the towel a little bit too early this season, and everything was in the can with them in fifth place in November, and everything's going to be fine. And then, you know, they've picked up 2 points since then.
Yeah. Well, 1-100 Wolves, 1-40 Burnley, then 4-9 West Ham. Obviously, they've lengthened a little bit with the results over the last couple of weeks. Forest are then 11-2. So it's a big jump from West Ham to Forest. Then Leeds are 13-2. Then Palace 7-1. Next team is Tottenham after that. And I guess you've got to. I always look at the relegation markets, and obviously there are exceptions to this rule. I always look at the relegation markets is trying to decide what do we think the total is going to be that's going to achieve safety. Yeah. Now, earlier in the season when West Ham were a few weeks ago when they were poorer, I was thinking low 30s, 32 points might just get you safety. Tottenham are on 28, Crystal Palace are on 28, Leeds 26, Forest 25, West Ham 20. Now, West Ham have played 23 games, got 20 points. That's what they average, and that's what they will continue to average. I find it hard to believe that they will average more than a point a game in this season when they're not already averaging a point a game after 23 matches. So that, you know, they've won two games, great. Are they the sort of team that go and win three in a row? I think the last time they won three in a row was back in 2023 in the league, that is. So they drew the cup game, by the way. Technically, they drew it in 90 minutes and won after that. So I don't think they're the sort of team. I don't think it's about Palace and Forest and Leeds necessarily. Forest could get dragged in. I wonder if West Ham can bridge that gap.
Yeah.
Forest have got wind. I think Forest have got enough points in them between now and the end of the season to stay above West Ham. West Ham are going to have to go some to overtake these teams, aren't they? Because what you're relying on is Forest or Leeds losing, you know, losing most of their games. They're not doing that. They won't do that. They're capable, as Forest showed last weekend. Great result. I didn't expect it. I thought Brentford would beat them. It was my nap of the week, Brentford to beat Forest at home. But look what Forest went. They did a job, did an absolute job on them, didn't they? The only interesting thing about West Ham is that the new guy who's gone in to support Nuno seems to be having a big impact at the club. They say he's a bit of a tyrant, and you know he's kind of, but maybe he's instilled a bit more kind of, you know, like, you know, a bit more kind of, I don't know, like hardness in them, or something a bit more, just giving them a bit more of something. Be fascinating if they close Forest down. Wow. I mean, will Dyche survive with four managers in one season? It could be a Forest. But yeah, that result last week just kind of set the minds at rest. And I think, like, I'm probably in a minority here, but I think Liam Rossini has done an incredible job given all the kind of negativity around him. And yeah, I know his first few results were good, but the performances weren't. But let's be fair, like, I thought they were very good last weekend, albeit against a poor Palace team. And then in midweek, I mean, they've gone to Napoli. No one's won there since December 2024 and gone and beaten Napoli. Napoli were at it. So they're doing well. I think Chelsea beat West Ham with it in hand this weekend. So yeah, it's gonna be a fascinating one. Interestingly, like, on Final One Standing, loads of people picked West Ham last weekend, and I was like, wow. And obviously they got through because of it. So yeah, they were a big pick last weekend. So maybe the tide is turning a little bit. There's a new 50k game launching on Saturday, by the way. I should mention 3 p.m. deadline. So we've got a load of games underway and a few games that could be finished this weekend, including one of the 100,000 euro games from earlier in the season that has only got about 11 players left in it. But yeah, the new 50k game starts Saturday, 3 p.m. If anyone hasn't played, or they've been knocked out, or they've won one of them big things and they want to have another go, then it's a brand new game to get involved with. And this one, you know, anyone can have a go as well.
Yeah, I dipped my toe back in last week for, I think it was a 20k game. It was the first time I got over the post-traumatic stress disorder and not winning the 500 grand. And I went back in, knocked out the first round.
Oh, who did you have?
I can't even remember. That's I might have had Brentford. I'm not sure. I know anyway. I realized, like, you know, early in the day is like, well, this isn't going to happen again. Lightning is not going to strike twice. So
yeah.
I was due.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, there's loads of chances to get back involved. Yeah, this is the biggest pot we've had for a little while, this 50k one. So it's part of this Gold Weekend. So it's a big weekend of offers, like I said, again, across football, across racing, across darts, whatever you're interested in. Check out all the offers on the app.
Okay, Lee Phelps, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, been a pleasure. Have a good weekend, guys.
You too. The final one standing on Off the Ball is brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie. Lads, before we go, just a couple of little other things to talk about. There is a three-way title race, at least in name only, right?
Yeah. You think United can catch?
There we go. Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to talk about United in a sec. That is the main event here. But I just want to talk about Villa briefly, like, because Brentford was almost a nadir, and so it was Palace was the nadir early on in the season when everything went horribly and they were hammered at Villa Park. But there was a, you know, Brentford was that first defeat, and then they played them in the League Cup, and Harvey Elliott of all people actually scored a goal. That was Villa's first goal of the season, and then they lost on penalties, and it was like to, you know, a second team for Brentford, and you're like, this is. But also at the same time, that told a Brentford story that would reveal itself over the next few months and so on, right? But from Villa's point of view, it's like, even last night, like, half a team out, 2-0 down, in a game that doesn't really matter. How much does it really matter if you're home in the second leg up to the semi-final of the, you know,
I think it does.
I don't, like, they were still taking off experienced players and putting on kids,
yeah.
You know, even when down. And they turned it around and won it. And there is just something about that. I wasn't expecting them to win at St James's Park last week.
Were you not? No.
No, not at all. Like, you'd almost not expect anybody to go and win at St James's Park. Yeah. Like, I was hoping that they'd get a result, and it was just a really good performance. But meanwhile, you're losing Kamara, you're losing John McGinn.
Tielemans
now. We haven't really seen them without him, really, except for last night yet. But, like, Tielemans is a huge loss. Everything goes through him. And they're bringing back, like, you know, Leon Bailey is back.
Douglas Luiz
is back. And Tammy Abraham is back. You're only allowed to bring in players that formerly played for the club. Is like a new rule or something like that.
Is the Watkins
something
one
is ticking on. But, yeah, well, it is. But let's see how Tammy Abraham gets on. True. But it's not going to give him much time to settle in now if Watkins is out for a while. We don't know how long. It looks like a hamstring injury. Hopefully not too serious. But he's been scoring goals, and that's one of the things that Villa needed, was if they are to kind of match these results, they're not going to do it without Watkins starting to score, and he has been. So it's just been this, it's been an unbelievable but kind of like inexplicable season. Yeah. And they are there. Like, I've never thought that there's enough depth or enough quality even really for them to be in a title race, but they're achieving about as much as they can possibly achieve. And if Arsenal keep faltering, I don't really trust Man City to stretch ahead or anything like that.
Yeah.
So there is, until it's not there, it is there. Yeah. You know what I mean? And we have to start thinking of it that way.
Yeah, and it seems to be like overperforming the metrics. Like 13 goals from outside the box this season is incredible. And they're kind of showing that, like, there are more ways, you know, more than one way to score a goal. And like the performance last week against Newcastle was really, really good. But like, I just don't know how they're going to maintain this towards the end of the season, especially if you're playing Europa League. Okay, they're missing the playoff round, which is a good thing, but like, just the depth of squad, like, who's going to play in central midfield on Sunday?
It'll be Onana and probably Lamar Bogart, presuming that Douglas Luiz doesn't come in and start straight away. But what you have there, that's fine, that can manage.
Yeah.
But Onana doesn't do five games in a row before he gets injured.
Yeah.
And that's just been the case with him since he signed for Villa. He's been one of those things that he was like a record signing. And he hasn't been bad. He's been very good, actually. But he's seen as a flop signing because he can't stay on the field. Like, it's really frustrating when a player is like that. But, you know, again, everybody, like, Rodgers is playing as well as he's ever played now, and that's coming from a high bar. You got players that, like, people don't notice, right? Matty Cash, right, is a completely different footballer than he was 2 or 3 years ago when everybody decided their opinion on Matty Cash.
Yeah.
And that's, again, you just think, like, that's down to coaching.
Yeah.
Like, they are getting the most out of what they have there. Ezri Konsa might be the best centre back in the league at the moment, or he's up there with them anyway. Like, you know. So it's just, again, it just feels like there isn't the resources there to maintain it. So, being honest, you know, I'm saying, I'm sitting here wearing a Villa top, but I am trying to be in some way neutral and honest in my assessment of it. And I do watch every game. Like,
I know what you're saying about the title race, though, because there's almost a fine even in the Grand National about it, that all the focus is on the other two horses here, and they're going to go at it. The pressure's going to ratchet up for Arsenal and City across the course of the next few months. And maybe Villa can sneak in and just keep the results going steady. The pressure, look, will ultimately come on Villa as well. If they're still this distance behind Arsenal come start of April, the pressure will ratchet up and everyone will be
talking
about
it. You don't think it'll feel free hitty if they say, I think looked at last week and it's like the title race thing is like you don't like when the neutral third party leaves them out of the conversation. But the Villa fan doesn't really think they're in it either.
Yeah.
You know, so what we're thinking of after last week is like that's 13 points on Newcastle now. You can kind of say forget about Newcastle.
Yeah.
So you're kind of thinking, right, there's only six teams now.
Yeah.
Including Arsenal, City and Villa.
Yeah.
There's only six. And we only have to get fifth.
At what point?
You know, so you're only kind of thinking that. You're thinking like what is enough? When does that gap over Liverpool become enough?
Mm.
So as much as we're talking about the title race, the reality is you're thinking, keep winning here.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get lower than fourth.
No. Because you can't trust Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea.
They're just not picking up wins, most of these teams.
And they're not going on a run. But I think like in a kind of this season where we've seen a lot of Premier League managers sacked, I think Unai Emery is pulling off one of the best coaching performances of the Premier League era, I guess. Like to keep this team, okay, they've got loads of good players, but the thing you can judge Emery on is that I think he's improved every single player that's gone to Villa.
Yeah.
And to do like to kind of compete on two fronts, three fronts, obviously they're still in the cup. Like there's a massive opportunity for Villa to do something like incredible this season. And even if they don't, it's still been a hell of a season for them anyway.
Absolutely. I think that's the focus. It's not kind of like this sort of miracle or this like statistics beating, you know, this XG thing that I bang on about a lot. You know,
I know you hate it, but I do see the merits in it sometimes.
It's the points thing that I don't like. I don't mind you saying, right, okay, that was like, you analyse it for its own worth, that's fine. But the points thing don't matter because the circumstance of a game is played on what the real goals are. And teams sit back or teams go forward based on what the actual score of the match is.
Yeah, but then,
you know, like they lost the XG in a game against Bournemouth that they won 4-0.
Yeah,
like explain that to me and tell me that that's actually in statistical terms, that's a Bournemouth win.
Yeah, you know? But I think it's just more a case of, they did more with less of what they have, and it's just a good way.
But I think that's overperforming isn't necessarily a statistical anomaly, is my point. So if you look at the goals from outside the box, that's a tactic.
Yeah,
that's when teams suddenly sort of load some corners, people say, oh, they've identified a metric where things are underutilized. You know, chances are underutilized. Villa are looking at Emi Buendia is like. Players are still stepping off him constantly. Yeah. And suddenly, if you look at the goal against Newcastle, a brilliant goal. Nobody's closing him down.
Yeah,
he's got 3-4 seconds to pick out a spot. Professional footballers are able to do that.
You
know, but XG on that is probably 0.05 or something, you know?
I don't know, like, I as a football fan or as someone that's trying to like learn more about the game, I find the stats quite like, them sort of
they are not useless. I absolutely don't agree. I just don't believe. I think they are one thing.
Yeah.
And this idea that, you know, Villa have more points than their stats suggest. It's only one stat.
Yeah.
And, you know, have more points than their stats suggest. Therefore, they are not actually as good as that. There's millions of reasons I would say that Villa aren't as good as the third best team in the league.
Yeah.
But the fact is, I think that, you know, that these things are being exploited.
Yeah.
You know, these opportunity costs or whatever the expressions are.
Yeah, and I think even like, you're right. It is a tactic that Villa have made the most out of, like shooting from outside the box. And if you can kind of do that and have like maybe, like was the Leicester City season like inexplicable? Like, can Villa have just one of them seasons where, okay, obviously not from the same level, but like, can Villa just keep kind of going on this run where we kind of look at metrics, we look at stats and we just think, I don't really understand what's going on, but they keep on winning games.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if Villa went on to win the league from this point because it's been such a weird...
I'd be massively surprised.
It's a weird season. I'd be massively surprised, though. I don't think it's going to happen.
I'm saying that because of the teams around. So Arsenal, you can't be trusted. City probably are the most dangerous of the three, and maybe if they get in a run, they could do some damage. They've done it before under Pep. But I'm saying, look, it would be a surprise if Villa won.
Yeah, Villa lost to Everton at home 2 games ago. Like, you know, there is, and probably the worst performance of the season.
At what point do you believe as a Villa fan? At what point would you start to believe as a Villa fan?
If you're in it in April, mate, and I think even in it come that late in the season wouldn't be 4 points as it is now. That'd be out of it for me because it's like, are Arsenal going to not win, you know, 3 of their last 5 games? You know, you would think that they will. And like, they've got... But look, I don't know. I just want to stay involved in it and it's exciting. Believe. And every match is an event. And I have to say, lads, we're going to talk about Man United now for a second. We're running out of time. I didn't mean to talk about Villa for so long. But as a football fan, you guys are starting to kind of realise it as well. But like, United don't have that traditionally. But as a football fan, it's like, if every match is an event and every match is relevant, it is the best thing in the world. Yeah. Because so much of us, of our time is spent with nothing teams going nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, right, you try to big yourself up, you try to pretend there's a plan, but it's not happening.
Yeah.
And that brings me to two Manchester United fans on, like, this must be the best, like, couple of weeks of... I'm going to say, like, almost ever in terms of being a fan of a team, because if you're winning leagues and doing all those things, you're expecting it as well. And you're, you know, you have these great moments. But when you're kind of coming from, like, the depths of hell and put two massive wins in a week that are also backed up by two unbelievable performances, a team that makes sense and is showing the type of potential that you wouldn't be 100% sure was there.
Mm.
And now you can see what could work with this team. Like, if they go, say, if they go and do beat Fulham well tomorrow or Sunday, whenever it is, right? And it's like, right, this is the new test because we're going to have to control the game. We're going to have to play slightly higher. And then they do that. Then you're in dreamland. Like,
it's funny because the...
As in the dream being, we might be out of crisis.
Four.
No, the dream being the banter days or the banter era is over.
We've seen so many false downs before.
They're so afraid to get carried away.
It went from the worst week. So I remember texting my mates. And so in the 1 week, they sack Amorin. Fletcher comes in. They draw away to Burnley. And then they're knocked out of the FA Cup by Brighton, and it's such a horrendous week. Carrick comes in, the feel-good factor is back, but it's different. Like, a lot of managers have beaten, even some of the crap managers that they've had, have beaten City, have beaten Arsenal, have beaten Liverpool, but it was the performance against City,
definitely.
The performance against Arsenal, which would make you get excited a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it could all fall flat. Like, if they were to lose to Fulham on Sunday, which, by the way, is a possibility.
Fulham are seventh in the league. Like, they're not rude.
4 points behind, you know. Yeah. Then things come falling, and United fans would expect that a little bit. There aren't many United fans getting completely carried away, but there are serious strong points. And Roy Keane does have one good point, that Carrick has come in at a good time, and that the AFCON lads came back. Mbeumo and Ahmad are so dangerous. Yeah. Like, Cunha is such a weapon off the bench.
Maguire and Martinez. I don't think, not that they would have been his first choice anyway, but I would say that Amram never had Maguire and Martinez available on the same match day.
Yeah, properly.
Yeah.
And De Ligt was out for a long time under Amram there recently as well.
He still is.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, I'd be very inclined not to get too far ahead of ourselves. Like, Manchester United fans have done it so many times in the past where it's like, oh my God.
I'm not trying to lure you into a trap here, I promise.
I know, but like, United should be, like, they have one thing to focus on every single week.
Yeah.
Manchester United should be, and John Wilson said this during the week on Off the Ball Breakfast, like, United should be fresh. They should be able to, like, take teams on and kind of, you know, where the Premier League has got so physical and it's become like basketball, as Anthony Gordon said during the week. United should be, like, putting in performances, like, it's the bare minimum. They've got like 15, 16 games left. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, they've nothing else to focus on. And if they don't get into the top four, then it's an absolute, or it's a top five now, with which the coefficient is in the Premier League this season. But it'd be an absolute disaster if they don't get into the top five. I don't know. I like this game against Fulham. Fulham are a really good side. Harry Wilson's playing for that new contract. Looks like he's going to leave Fulham at the end of the season. Marco Silva looks like he could be leaving Fulham at the end of the season. I think they're in a vein of form where they're just like, we don't really care. We're just going to go for it. Like, so I'd have serious reservations about Sunday. And it's on Off the Ball, 2 o'clock Sunday, Stephen Doyle, Owen Doyle. Mm. So live commentary.
The Doylers.
There's also Patrick Dorgu's injury, which is a key one as well. I know Mason Mount will probably, Matheus Cunha was obviously
different
on the
player,
bench the last couple of games. But I heard someone saying recently, where was this United for the Europa League final in Bilbao? And I was at that game. But if you look back, like, Onana was in goal. Senne Lammens is far more adept as a goalkeeper, and he was unknown coming to the club. They have far more attacking talent. Rasmus Højlund was up top. Alejandro Garnacho, they had some toxic players in the dressing room as well. So things have turned around a little bit, and they're heading in the right direction, but they still have a couple of players short of any kind of a title charge in the next couple of years, obviously. And Casemiro obviously leaving at the end of the season, there'll be
it's a big loss.
A gap there, yeah.
Yeah, I just think be positive. And I would also say that there's no point in overreacting as well. They play well against Fulham and draw.
Yeah,
you know, every team in the Premier League will do that this season. You know, like, they're you can't win every game in this Premier League, which is why the points are the way they are. I haven't believed in them at any point in any of their wins, or United fans, you know, clutching at straws. I feel like it's been a lot of clutching at straws, and now I almost feel it's the opposite. I think I saw two performances in the last 2 weeks that were good enough to make me think this is a real team. It's definitely a Champions League minimum team, as you would say, David. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I don't think I believe that beforehand. I thought that they would slip down you know, to a mean.
Yeah.
That you know, despite results.
Seventh or eighth.
You know, yeah, well, like, even battling for sixth.
Yeah, yeah, like, the 3-4-3 Amrum days were not just only really bad to watch, but, like, we've seen actually Sporting, who qualified in the top eight of Champions League during the week, so it's almost like Amrum wasn't the main
the setup
point
of Sporting.
You know,
yeah,
it was more like the kind of structure around him. And obviously United are kind of trying to create a structure with Barada and Wilcox, whatever else. Look, I don't trust them either at the minute anyway.
Mm, that's
and
fair.
So, like, look, Michael Carrick's in here. He's in there to do a job. He's got 15 games to get United into the Champions League. If he does that, fair play to him. I think probably United are going to give him the job.
And Roy Keane said if he wins every game, he still wouldn't give him the job, which is an interesting take.
I wouldn't go off anything Roy Keane says.
Yeah, he's kind of... Some of the comments on United have been interesting the last couple of weeks.
Okay, Manchester United Fulham is live on Off the Ball on Sunday. The Doyles, Owen and Stephen on commentary there. And then we've Spurs Man City at 4:30, who's on commentary for that?
Phil Egan and Keith Tracy.
There we go. So that's Sunday's Off the Ball. Loads of live Premier League. We'll be back with more Final One Standing next week.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.